I was a law of God to accept you, O Lord of strength and of verse 3 of our previous hymn. Take up your cross, nor heed the shame, and let your foolish pride be still. The Lord refused not even to die on a cross on Calvary's hill. Last August, when my wife Jackie and I visited Lausanne with the rest of Europe, Lausanne with the rest of Europe was baking in a summer heat wave, you remember. You couldn't keep us away from Lutry and the lake with the rest of the swimmers and sun worshippers. So when I arrived on Wednesday, by contrast, I was greeted by a blast of Scottish weather, rain and sleet, weather I'm much more used to. And then when I opened the blinds at the manse in Geneva the next morning, it was white out. And later, as we drove across with Lawrence and Lindy, we drove across to Geneva via the hills. It was a winter wonderland of meadows and trees and farm buildings. Very, very beautiful. And as I wrote this on Friday morning, the sky was blue, the sun was in its heaven, and magnolia trees were in full bloom. Another incredible contrast in just 3 days. All was right in God's world. As far as our weather is concerned, then, we're used to dramatic contrasts, even when we still take our breath away. And it's that notion of contrast that I'd like to try and highlight in today's reading from John chapter 12. It's a well-known passage which you have read, a passage in which the disciples at table in the home of Lazarus and his sisters Mary and Martha, Jesus' feet are anointed sacrificially. Sacrificially because that pound or pint of pure nard would represent 4 years' wages in that version, 1 year's wages in the version I read, for a labourer. A labourer's wages for years, sacrificially poured over Jesus' feet. And the lesson, of course, is also one about sacrifice, because it prefigures the action that Mary takes, prefigures the week of Jesus' death, the week of his death, when his body was anointed, bruised and broken, his body was anointed for burial. But today I'd like to take up another theme that runs through the passage. Not so much that one of sacrifice, but one of contrast. And it's the contrast between the love of friends, as expressed by Mary, and the flip side of that devotion, betrayal. Betrayal as foreshadowed in Judas's complaints. Love of friends, and the flip side, betrayal. Back home in Scotland, Jackie and I have lots of magnets attached to our fridge. Mostly, they are of places we have visited. We even have our Mobilis travel passes cards from last year proudly displayed. But amongst them, there's a very old fridge magnet that I treasure. It was given to my late wife by her sister, and it simply says, sisters by chance, friends by choice. Sisters by chance, friends by choice. So what about the love of friendship? In days gone by, as a young man, at weddings, I used to give the couple before me the benefit of my wisdom and advice. These days I tend to keep stumm. Partly because many couples have already been living together for some time, and of course they don't need any advice, do they? And partly because I now reckon such advice as a little bit condescending in the circumstances. But when I did give that kind of advice, or when I did do a little marriage sermonette, I sometimes used Willie Barclay. Willie Barclay was a very famous New Testament scholar in Glasgow University, who wrote many commentaries, you may have some of them. He even appeared on television doing straight-to-camera lectures on New Testament books. This was in the days of black and white, which most of you won't remember. But maybe laugh for that one. Willie Barclay wrote famously a little New Testament word book. If you ever come across it anywhere, do snap it up. And in that word book, if you look up love, then Willie Barclay tells you there are four loves in the New Testament. And this is the little sermonette I used to give couples. The first love is eros. That's that intense, passionate, physical love between the sexes, where we get the word erotic from. The love that makes us burn with desire. And once I had a couple in the congregation all excited about that love, I would pour a little bit of cold water on things by saying it would last. If the love is to grow, I'd say it'll have to be more than just erotic romance. And so we could move on to storge. Storge is the love of family affection, the strong bonds of friendship that a family encourages, love between parents and children, given and received, the love that binds a family together. Of course, a very complex and sometimes problematic love, a love that's so powerful that it can be for good or indeed for evil, a love in which a lot can go well, but sometimes a love in which things can go wrong. So I would suggest that as with erotic love, passionate love, so also with storge, we have to tread carefully in case we break any of the unwritten rules and the love is tested or even lost. In contrast to those two, the third love that Willie Barclay talks about is a sort of middle ground between passion and family love. And he calls this philia. It's a very common word in English, philia. It comes from the Greek, and for our purposes this morning, we'll call it friendship. Friendship, which is warm affection. The warm affection in which friends hold one another, the comfort and beauty of something shared. Friendship is based on common interests and common experiences. And that makes friendship in many ways an easier relationship than the other two. Because friends can be relaxed with one another. Friends can be relaxed with one another's company. They can enjoy one another's company. They can be themselves. Friends are people who can not only overlook one another's foibles, but might even come to appreciate one another's funny little ways and go to find them endearing. C.S. Lewis famously wrote that while lovers long to look into one another's eyes, friends stand side by side, looking towards the common interest that drew them together in the first place, the common interest that sustains their staying together. And Jesus loved Lazarus in this way. John tells us twice in the previous chapter, Jesus loved Lazarus, his friend. And John, the gospel writer, also tells us later that he loved the beloved disciple. This is the love that Mary pours out at Jesus' feet. A love that is comfortable to do something that others are finding embarrassing. A love that is sacrificial in a way which others find foolish. And I suppose, by contrast, that's how Judas is here portrayed, someone who is embarrassed, someone who is disconcerted, embarrassed, and then perhaps outraged at such a waste of expensive perfume. And he's right, of course, what about the poor? But Jesus takes all this in his stride. It might be an unusual gesture of friendship, but Jesus and Mary are both comfortable. They're comfortable enough in their friendship to enjoy that genuineness and intimacy. However, the outrage that Judas experiences at the waste of the perfume seems to have been translated later. That outrage seems to have blossomed into betrayal. Perhaps at another piece of waste, perhaps Judas realized that Jesus was about to waste his life's work. There was the opportunity to make something of the crowd's adulation. Jesus could have been somebody. I can't believe that Judas betrayed his friend for the sake of 30 pieces of silver. I think that his friend betrayed through disillusionment, through disagreement, through disgust over goals and outcomes. Judas couldn't believe that Jesus could throw away, that Jesus could waste not just a jar of perfume, but his whole life's work, the work that his friends and disciples had shared in. Remember, they said, "Jesus, we left everything for you. And is this our reward? This failure? This foolishness? This passion and loss?" Judas wants Jesus, his friend, to fulfill his dreams and not the destiny that Jesus had been telling him about. As a friend, Judas no longer stands side by side with Jesus, facing a shared future, shared destiny. Judas has slipped round, stepped forward to confront Jesus with a different dream, one not shared by his friend. And it's that break in their friendship that results in confrontation and ultimately betrayal. So what about us? Jesus still invites us into his circle of friends, into that relationship of love. And because you remember that he is the incarnate one, God on earth, Jesus' invitation is to enter into friendship with God. The love of God in Christ Jesus extended into our lives. And the New Testament word for that is the fourth word, agape. And that's a loving relationship which, as it deepens and becomes more intimate, that's a relationship which will spread beyond the lover, beyond the family, beyond even our circle of friends. The agape of God extends to the neighbor, the enemy, to all the world. The agape of God will enable us, his family and friends and his lovers, to do things for God, to pray by the bedside of one who is dying, to work with the hungry and the homeless, no matter the danger or the embarrassment. The agape of God will make us less like Judas and more like Mary, a fragrant offering, filling not just a